the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on iTunes and at davedameshek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal Dave, Dave Dameshek. What's going down? I hope all's well wherever you are. Welcome to episode number 129 of the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available, as always, on iTunes and at nfl.com/Sheck. S-H-E-K, we are back in the Nerve Center on the West Coast for the NFL in Culver City, California. We've returned from a glorious week in New Orleans. I achieved my goal. I am happy to announce Super Bowl 47. In honor of that, I gained 47 pounds. I gained every ounce of it, and I'm proud to say I did. Now the hard work begins of shedding it before next season. We have lots of time because we're just about as far away from the start of the next football season as we could possibly get. Let's break down what we just saw, though, in NOLA, in the Superdome, and outside in what was a glorious, glorious week with my main man, as always, from NFL.com. He was on the NFL.com live program, which I think is still available. We interviewed a bevy of superstars from football and beyond on there. You can look at that at NFL.com. It's Adam Rank. What's the poop, fella?
Hey, boss. Thanks for having me.
Sure, sure.
Also want to say that you can probably check out a lot of the stuff that I did on NFL.com/FanPass.
Yes.
Which is something that we'll probably be doing at other events in the future, too. So if you can give that a check as well, just to see what you and I were doing, running around, running into all the sorts of people. You, however, when you said you gained the weight that you wanted to gain.
Yes.
If you guys have followed me at all, you guys know that every Friday I meticulously weigh myself in to see how I've been progressing over the last 52 weeks, doing pretty good. So I didn't do it on Monday, was too afraid to, but Friday, because I was I actually lost weight in New Orleans.
You lost weight there? I'll tell you what, I would hide that. I'd be humiliated.
But I'm saying the weekend might have pushed me back the other way, that if I would have waited on Monday, it might have been a little bit different. But Friday, given the circumstance, because Thursday was a huge long day for me, and I barely ate, then I'm like, oh, okay.
All right. Your weight loss is number 233 on the list of things we need to talk about here. It's you know what? I've weighed in on it, on your weight. I think it's better for the show. I think you look better when you're a fat man. I'd like you to gain it back ASAP. All right, we're going to talk about the big game, though, Super Bowl 47. We got to figure out where it ranks. Also, we got to figure out Hall of Fame talk, too. That's sort of as usual. That happens on Saturday night, and we really didn't break that down very much, of course, because the big game got in the way of that, but I want to talk about that a little bit. Let's yap about all of it. Another man who was with us in NOLA throughout the week from all the way across the Atlantic Ocean. The Dolphins' big fan, it's Handsome Hank.
He's Handsome Hank from England, handsome from England. He's Handsome Hank from England, handsome from England. He's Handsome Hank from England, handsome from England. His name is Handsome Hank. He's handsome, eh?
Hello, Handsome. How are you?
I am very well indeed. Thank you,
Dave. Are you?
I love New Orleans. I had a great time. Congratulations, by the way, on the souvenir. I see you brought back a second chin. I like that a lot.
There's no reason for that. There's no reason to attack. I don't like that sort of thing. So, all right, fellas. I've written down a bunch of best of, worst of questions for you. And also, we should say hello to the guy behind the glass there, Black Tie, on yet another vacation.
What is he doing? Where does he go?
I have no idea where our usual producer, Black Tie, disappears to. But once again, we have another of his capable fill-ins there from the tie rack because he looks like Ty Detmer so much. It's Ty Ty. How are you, Ty Ty?
Great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, you didn't get to make the trip out to NOLA. Are you feeling raw about that?
Very raw.
Yeah. Raw, that's the first question. Raw oyster or char broiled? I start with you, Handsome Hank.
I went raw, and I will continue to. I like a raw oyster. Bit of Tabasco on there, of course. They have the crystal hot sauce in New Orleans, which I brought a pot back with. That was the one souvenir I brought back from New Orleans, was a bottle of that crystal hot sauce. But, yeah, raw oysters all the way.
Rank, I throw it to you.
Char broiled was good. Mm-hmm. Also did the fried.
Now, that's the only kind of oyster I don't fancy. I don't know why. I've just never enjoyed a fried oyster.
Yeah, I went to this place called Coop's on Decatur. It was actually pretty good. I'm not a big oyster guy. I don't particularly care for them raw, but charbroiled and fried, pretty pleasant.
They do something to them. Rank and I, on Monday night, I believe it was, we went out to Acme Oyster House, one of the more popular joints, to get the charbroiled oysters. We went there. And we had some Abita Turbo Dogs, a delicious local brew. And Vernon Davis was in there, which was cool. Mm-hmm. Glad handing and shaking hands. So let's start there. Or should we get into the game? I don't know. What game or
the game has been hashed over. I say we do it quickly.
All right. We'll bounce back and forth. Some game, yeah. some yes. of the game called life. We'll mix them both
You're
together.
At the wheel. You're at the wheel.
Yeah, you're right. All right. Who was the best star sighting you had? Rank, I start with you.
Julie Chen.
from what's that show called?
The Big Brother.
She's also the old lady of Les Moonves.
That's right? Correct.
That's how she got the gig, probably. Well, no, I'm sure she's a capable broadcaster, and that's how she got the gig. But
yes, there's a savviness to being. Yeah. Pulling out Julie. Of course, yes.
Biggest star sighting for you, Handsome Hank.
Dave, every year at Superboy, I try and have some kind of contact with Don Shula. Mm-hmm. And I think you may have witnessed.
I did.
He came. Don doesn't like to walk too much anymore, so he was being wheeled through the lobby of the hotel.
And Wait a second. So by choice?
I think his legs are tired. I think his legs are tired, and there are times when he'll happily walk, and there are other times where he doesn't care to any longer. And I respect it. Like, if you did what he did, you can make that choice.
And Saturday night, right, I'm sorry.
Saturday night, he comes through, and I went over the top and gave him a big nod and a wave, and he gave me a beaming smile back. And
he really did. I was there to witness it, and he did. He went by in his little rascal scooter,
right.
Did Coach Shula, and he had a little moment with Handsome Hank. And that was good. And in the very spot a few hours later on Sunday morning, Franco Harris came walking by, of course, and I went up to him in New Orleans 38 years after he was the Super Bowl MVP of Super Bowl IX in Tulane Stadium, Franco mm-hmm. Harris. I said, hey, Franco, I told him that. I said, in case you aren't aware, it's 38 years ago that you were the Super Bowl MVP. Can I take a picture with you real quick? And he said, I'm sick. And I said, well, all right, let's take a picture. And he said, do you know how to work your phone? And I said, I'm taking the picture. And I took the picture, and that was the end of it. I don't like it when you get to scratch things off your bucket list and it's unsatisfying. And Franco wasn't exactly warm towards me, and that made me feel sad.
What made him think that you wouldn't know how to use your phone? That seems like a strange question.
I don't know. It was a second and a half. I wasn't fidgeting with it for, hold on a second. I got it. It was quick, but Franco didn't want to kibitz.
Not being able to use your phone, it reminds me of one of the best moments of the week for me. You guys might remember, I'm talking to the listening audience here, our former producer, Tie-Dye. Mm-hmm. Who is here? He was backstage with me at NFL Honors, and they had brought back. It was Peyton Manning. It was Adrian Peterson getting FedEx awards, and this is before the show started. And so, they take a. They're sitting there for a photo op, and Peyton Manning calls out, "Hey, can anybody take a picture with something other than an iPhone? I'd really appreciate it." And of course, Tie-Dye had a camera. But which he was using to shoot video, and he's trying to get it switched around, and he can't. He just keeps fumbling with it. And if you know Tie-Dye, it's only making it worse. The Peyton's like, really? You can't work your own camera? And finally just announced, can anybody work a camera? Can I find one person who can work a camera? And the second he walks away, Tie-Dye gets the camera working.
For longtime listeners of this podcast, Tie-Dye is infamous because 2 years ago at the Hall of Fame in Canton, we did 25 gangbusters minutes with Gale Sayers about, and this was the year after the Jay Cutler knee injury.
Wait, was it him or was it Mai Tai who blew that one?
I believe, we can blame.
Let's blame both of them.
I'm going with Tie-Dye on that one. But either way, we sat down with Hall of Famer Gale Sayers, who tore into Jay Cutler for his behavior on the sidelines and everything. 25 minutes talking about the best foods in Chicago. A delightful conversation from a rarely interviewed man, a legend of the game. And when we were done, Mai Tai informed us, or Tai Dai, one or the other, informed us, oh, yeah, we it didn't record. We didn't get any of that. So
the infamous lost podcast.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I said my response at the time was, oh, no worries. We'll just do it with Gale Sayers next week. And and they said, oh, you will? You got him back again? And I said, no, you dope. Then I let him taste the Han Solo edition blast. So, all right. But the correct answer is, Don Shula, I appreciate your loyalties to the Miami Dolphins, but of course, Handsome and I were in one of the countless great restaurants in New Orleans and Uptown, having really a top 12 all-time meal, and that's not hyperbole. One of the top 12 meals.
Company-wise, food-wise, everything, across the board, that was outstanding.
It was a positively gay time, made even better when Jay-Z came walking through the door. That was pretty good. You know,
it was good. It was a small restaurant as well, so it felt pretty exclusive that we were there.
Well, you only have so many bullets to fire, you know, in New Orleans. You feel like every one, that's the scary thing about you don't want to have a bad meal because, wow, we only have three left to go now, three dinners left. You want them to all be good. We went into that restaurant, and it was half full, and we thought, uh-oh, did we somehow land on a crummy joint here? Half hour later, it was jam-packed, and a half hour after that, in came Jay, and our night
was
made.
It
was in Uptown.
It was Uptown.
Coquette?
We went Uptown.
Coquette?
Coquette.
It was heaven.
It was heaven. Dave confused the waitress.
I didn't confuse her. I had questions for her about what I should eat, and she was trying to help me figure that out. It took quite some time to I think we did like three go-rounds by the time
you ordered three different.
So what? By the time we were done, I had gotten the order correct. My belly decided that I was right about that. All right, now we're going to switch into some game talk here. Quickly, let's jump to the end of the game. Rank, did they get the MVP right? It seems like a lot of people are buzzing about that Joe Flacco wasn't worthy of it. How say you?
I was surprised it wasn't Ray Lewis. Just, yes. But you get so much international media and people who don't really follow the game that much, and they'll be voting for names a lot of the time. That's true. Why is Peyton Manning a Super Bowl MVP?
They generally, more often than not, though, they get it right, I would say. I mean, the Peyton Manning one was probably inaccurate.
Peyton Manning one, both of Eli's, I could say. There always seems to be somebody deserving.
Well, who would you have given it to last year?
Last year?
I would have given it to Akeem Nicks, actually.
I would have given it to Justin Tuck. Mm-hmm. I would have given it to Weatherford.
I would have given it. That would have been met with a tepid response at best. So you say Ray Lewis.
No, probably would have been Jacoby Jones, right?
Jacoby Jones has the two probably defining plays for the Ravens, and I will say that Jacoby Jones, I say the play he makes on the deep ball, his one reception of the game, where he gets up. You rarely see a guy in the NFL, as much as you can get up off your feet if you're not touched to the ground. Guys can get up and run, but rarely do you see a guy make a great play once he gets back on his feet. He stands up and almost immediately pirouettes past one guy and then outraces the other guy to the pylon, essentially. It's a foot race all within the span of about 15 yards of the end zone. I think that will go down as one of the top 25 plays in NFL history. It was remarkable. But Chris Culliver, whether he likes it or not, I don't care. I know that's not his bag, touching guys, but it's your responsibility to touch Jacoby Jones down. So that play was assisted by Chris Culliver there of the 49ers. Handsome. I think that the correct call is Flacco, but it's not even Jacoby Jones who to me is number two. It's Anquan Boldin. He made Flacco look great on a lot of balls there, gets in the end zone, really tough catches on jump balls throughout the game, and he was a huge difference. Handsome, how say you?
I say Jacoby Jones because I think if you look at it, most valuable player, could the Ravens have won that game without him, and specifically without that kickoff return? And the answer is no, they wouldn't have won.
That's an
game.
Interesting
so his
way
his value
to, do that,
to the
yeah.
team was more. But then you look at what Flacco did, I think anyone who's saying that Flacco shouldn't have been MVP is probably looking at it from the point of view that his first half was great. Normally we're used to people having great second halves of games and they're winning the game in the second half and therefore they're MVP. If Flacco's second half or first half had been his second half, I don't think there'd be any question that he's the MVP.
Well, the other thing is, though, is that you know, whether or not you're supposed to do it this way, it's not supposed to be a body of work thing for what he did in the postseason overall, but it is that. He didn't get picked off the whole postseason. And, you know, obviously remarkable stuff. The Broncos D, that feels like you know, 3 months ago that when they played the game in Mile High. But the fact is that Broncos defense was no jive. The Patriots defense isn't very good, but the, you know, the Ravens is fine and the Colts isn't very good. But the fact is he went four games in the postseason and didn't get picked off once. Tom Brady can't say that and Peyton Manning can't say that. And so, yeah, I think you got to give it the I guess you give it to Flacco there. I wouldn't have gone crazy. As a matter of fact, I'm a little surprised by how crazy some people are getting about it. People won't stop talking about it like us right now for the last 10 minutes.
That's the one they get crazy over. What he did, if you compare to what Peyton Manning did to win his MVP award and you compare it to what – if Flacco, you can at least make a case. It seems legitimate. Like, yeah, I can understand Flacco getting it over Jones, over somebody like Bolden. Either one of those guys, okay, I get it. But why – still, Joe Flacco, just – nobody will just let this – like, fine, he's won. He won a Super Bowl. He was amazing in the playoffs. It's fine.
I do kind of body of work it and think he deserves it for that.
A couple of things, though, on that. Do you think that the elimination of kickoff returns, that point is now moot? There's no way – like
oh,
Jacoby
great,
Jones.
Great question. That didn't occur to me. Yeah, when that happens on the big stage like that, and really are the deciding points for the Ravens in the game,
that has to end that debate.
I don't know about that, but here's one thing. You know, I've failed to mention this, but since that conversation came up, whatever it was, 6-8 weeks ago, when the commissioner floated that in the piece about him, what was that on Time Magazine? Time Magazine, he said that maybe they'll eliminate kickoffs. Here's the problem with it. The numbers of football are now solidifying to a point that they're now relevant. Baseball numbers are so important and have been corrupted by the steroid era. And now you're 50 years into the Super Bowl era, roughly. And now the numbers mean something. It matters who is the all-time blank in any category. If you change the kickoff, if you no longer have kickoffs anymore, the numbers will get warped. They'll suddenly be meaningless numbers. If you start spotting the ball and you can go for it on fourth down instead of onside kicking and those kind of things, it'll corrupt what the numbers mean because quarterbacks will have more attempts in a game. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I don't think you can do it. That's a great way to look at it. That now you again. They always say the standard for Hall of Famers is, can you tell the story of the NFL without that player? Now, can you tell the story of this Super Bowl without that kickoff return? Can't. No, it makes it hard to remove that. Handsome.
Yes.
I guess the decisive play, the one that people are breaking down and debating here, pass interference or defensive holding, whatever you want to call it, yay or nay on that fourth down from Kaepernick to Michael Crabtree.
I was lucky enough yesterday morning, Monday morning, we're speaking on Tuesday, on Monday morning I was lucky enough to get up bright and early in order to look after the website, and I switched on one of my favorite shows, NFL AM, and the talented crew on there were, you know, breaking down that play and really looking through it, and it was 50-50. I think if you called, if that was the play, if there'd been a flag there and that was the play that had decided the Super Bowl was a flag on that play, I think that gets left off 100 times.
I think that's unsatisfying. What would get that there was a flag there? People would forget.
I don't think there was a flag. I think 9 times out of 10 that doesn't get called. Well, it was a decisive play in the Super Bowl, but I don't think it gets called many times.
Here's the thing: there's seven total penalties called in that game. So if you like the idea, you always see that with umpires behind the plate very often in baseball, as they say, well, at least he's calling a big strike zone and it's consistent, or a small strike zone. At least the crew was consistent. They only called 7 penalties the whole stinking game there. So the issue to me is you can put it on Jimmy Smith or that the officials blew that call all you want, that the Ravens should have had a penalty there. But to me, the culprit is offensive coordinator of the 49ers, Greg Roman. What is he doing there?
Right.
What are they doing? First of all, with a chance to tie the game at 31, they're gashing them, especially from the time nada. They make their big push, the Niners do. From the moment that nada goes out, they really have no answer to the combo of Kaepernick putting it into Gore's gut or keeping it and running around the end. I mean, that was consistent through the second half. Why would Greg Roman have left that? And especially in the big – so the two-point conversion. You have a chance to tie the game. Why not continue to apply the pressure to the defense and force them to at least respect what Kaepernick might do on the ground? Instead, he just drops back and throws a fade on that two-point conversion. Insignificant? Fat. Huge if they tie the game and the Ravens go down the field and kick the field goal as they did, then in that spot on fourth down and five, fourth and goal at the five, the Niners also would have kicked the field goal, presumably to force the overtime. So that if they get that two-point conversion, 2.5 yards, you have Kaepernick and Frank Gore back there. You don't just try to run that in. That seems like the biggest gimme for any of the 32 teams in the NFL for Kaepernick to be able to make that 2.5 yards. Then Frank Gore gets him down to the 7. He needs a blow. Fine. You put in the rookie LaMichael James. If you were going to run on any spot out of the 4 downs, that's the spot you do it. I wouldn't have wanted to give it to the rookie LaMichael James, who fumbled earlier in the game. Fine, they do. 2nd and goal from the 5. They try to throw it in the short flat to Crabtree. That doesn't connect. The 3rd down, the clock is ticking down. The time clock is going down. Clearly, they were going to run some variation on either giving it to Gore or rolling Kaepernick out to the left, but the clock expires. They barely get the timeout. Fine. They feel like they've shown their hand. So on 3rd down, they throw it again. 4th and goal, the season on the line. I don't care if it's 5 yards. You still have to move Kaepernick out at least apply that pressure. Kaepernick probably is the guy who audibles that at the line of scrimmage because he sees that the Ravens are coming to get him, so he audibles out of whatever they had called. I just thought those last 4 downs, if I were a Niners fan, I would be sick, and in fact, over the course of the whole game, I'd be sick that LaMichael James fumbles it away. I feel like at 7-3, LaMichael James fumble, I think they were about to make it 10-7, and I think they don't even look back. I think they would have smoked him from that point forward. But to keep settling for the field goals and that bad turnover there, the fumble by James, and the play calling at the end, it made no sense to me. Handsome, I start with you.
I totally agree. I mean, even earlier in the game, I know that when Nauta went out, it made sense, but they didn't use Kaepernick the same way they've been using him through the postseason. During the first half really at all. And when we were looking through the course of the week and we had a lot of stories on NFL.com about the success of the pistol and how Kaepernick's been playing, and we were looking at the percentage of plays they'd had out of the pistol through when he started all the way through the postseason, it seemed very strange that that incredible success they'd had recently, they were sort of putting aside and trying to ask him to win the game with his arm.
I agree. Well, obviously I agree. I made the initial point there. Rank, how say you?
Also, we all agree you should run the ball down there. If you need to keep the clock moving there, too, because the 49ers were in a position.
Right. Another point, right.
They were in a position to where, you know, they didn't have any timeouts left because Harbaugh took a timeout. They wasted their timeouts. So this was their last chance. So if they had scored, let's say they went ahead, well, the Ravens had 2 minutes left that they could have gone down and scored two. You want to run the ball, at least keep the clock moving, or at least make the Ravens have to use their timeouts. Thought that was interesting, too. It's like, yes, but you got to run the ball.
All right, let's get another voice in here on this. Another fellow who we had just a terrific time with over the week down there in New Orleans. He's one half of the Around the League Debate Club. Get ready, Flames. Here he is, your pal, Dan Hanzus.
Hanzus and Mr. Fancy Pants. The Flames need NFL news, and here's their chance. It's ATL Around the League. Light a flame, boys. Pigskin's hot tonight. Burn, baby, burn.
Hello, Hanzus. What's the poop?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Swell, swell. I don't know if you heard what we were talking about. Weigh in here.
Well, I do think that Jim Harbaugh, when he does sit down to watch a tape, I don't know if he has yet, it's going to go down very hard for him, you know, both in the mistakes they made on the field and his play calling. He just had a press conference today where, as I'm watching it, the guy just looks completely drained. I mean, this has to have been, you know, he called it a devastating loss. And, you know, when he really, as the time gets away, he's going to probably feel worse. I mean, they should have won this game and they didn't.
That, I've taken a lot of heat from Ravens fans on Twitter and such, but I stand by. I mean, I really thought that the Niners were going to put it on them, and watching that game, there wasn't anything that said to me there's no reason why over 60 minutes that they shouldn't have won that game by 2 minutes. But, you know, Flacco, to his credit, he threw some jump balls that looked as the ball's coming out of his hands. You think, oh, that's the best decision you have to make there. But Bolden made a couple of huge plays. Third and one, that 30-yard rainbow he threw there in particular stand out to me as decisive plays, obviously, in the game. Hanzus, let's now turn the page. We're going back and forth because you're just joining us here. We're going the streets of New Orleans, inside the Superdome, and vice versa, and back and forth and back and forth. Best bite of food you had all week?
That would be the carpetbagger steak at Giacomo's.
Wow!
Yeah,
he didn't. He didn't even take a breath.
No,
best bite of food, and an answer ready to go.
I watched him eat it.
It was like a lion on the on the plains devouring an impala that it had just pulled down.
This was a steak that was not like any regular steak, Dave. This steak.
I've been to Giacomo's. Yes. Go there if you ever get to New Orleans, everybody. And by the way, Rank and I talked about it before we left. He and I continued this debate throughout the week. Even on Super Bowl Sunday morning, we were sitting in a bar. Because why? Because we're regular fellas. We don't need to be rubbing elbows with the muckety mucks, like handsome, all suited up. Rank and I.
Oh, we were suited up and we were hanging out at St. Lawrence.
But we're people, you and me, Rank. So we were sitting in there, and we were, we had a couple of Abitas. So what? Apology expected? Keep waiting, because it's not coming. We had a great time. In fact, it was crazy. In the bar that we were sitting in, what was it, 4 hours before the game, suddenly you hear a commotion, and you look out the window of the bar, and for literally a solid 10 minutes, there was a march of purple-shirted Ravens fans walking down the street in unison, singing and cheering, and it was quite grand. And I am certainly no Ravens fan, but I will say philosophically, I always like when people turn out like that. If you're a diehard fan base like that and you really want it, I have to say I feel a little happy when that's the group that wins, when that's the team's fan base that wins. They obviously were a dedicated bunch. I'm sorry I got distracted there.
Yes.
Continue there, Hanses.
No, the carpetbagger steak, I think about it all the time.
I do this. You know what? Don't apologize. I dream about the food that I've eaten, and I crave it, and I make plans to go and visit it again, and I'm going to go back to New Orleans sooner rather than later.
We started with the alligator cheesecake, which was special. Really a quiche rather than a pastry, but delicious. But the carpetbagger steak had oysters inside the steak as well as some type of crumpled blue cheese. It was special.
Well, so that's what I was saying. And Rank and I had the debate before, during, and we'll have it now again. Vegas. Rank loves his Vegas. But to me, that's where the junior varsity can go and hang out. They can have it for the rest of time. When you're ready to get serious, New Orleans is where it's at. That's the genuine article. It's beautiful. Architecture is grand.
Oh, yeah.
You can do all the things you like to do in Vegas, but the food is better. People are better. Yeah.
For the people listening at home, Rank just did like a Liz Lemon eye roll that almost went out of the back of his head when you said the statement about Vegas being junior varsity.
That is an outrage.
You walk down Bourbon Street, and the only thing that screams varsity. Yes, this is a varsity.
Bourbon Street is where the frat dudes are. They because they're not in Vegas at the time, that's where they go to Bourbon Street because they don't get the score. They don't know what the score is. You go outside, you go a block away from Bourbon Street, and there are gangbusters bars and restaurants as far as the eye can see.
And you still spent most of your time in a hotel bar.
I absolutely did not. How dare you? I saw all the colors of New Orleans.
You were there. You were sitting there in the Hyatt Hotel bar probably more than any place else.
Late on Saturday night I was, and I had, I had there? Late, it's at 2 a.m. on Saturday night. I had me. Oh, no, that was late Sunday night. I'm sorry. That was Super Bowl Sunday. That's how I finished night.
Saturday and Sunday.
Well, I was with the handsome one.
And Friday.
We made some great friends there.
Yes, we did.
Shout out to Stacy, if he's listening.
Yeah, shout out to Stacy indeed. We had a wonder. He invited – this is New Orleans. He invited us to join him at his table and because there weren't seats elsewhere. He was a native son of New Orleans, and we had a wonderful three-hour time with him late into the night. Then Sunday night, Hanzus, Mark Sessler, the other around the leaguer, handsome and I – had I had a grilled drumfish sandwich And I went back for another one on Monday before we got on the plane. And, I, you know, listen, again, no apologies coming. Handsome, best bite of food for you all week.
I've gone on the internet to look up what was in this because it was so good. I need to make sure I capture everything. So I went to a place called Dick and Jenny's one night with some friends actually from the UK. I ate something called Abita braised beef short ribs.
Ooh.
Over goat cheese thyme grits with brown butter sautéed Brussels sprouts and a spiced bourbon demi-glaze. Let me tell you something.
Yeah.
I woke up at 3:30 the morning after that. I mean, I felt terrific when I was eating. I woke up at 3:30 in the morning. I thought my sides were going to split. I've never been more full of food, but in a joyful way.
Wow.
In a happy, happy way. It was delicious.
That sounds terrific. Rank, how say you?
Best bite of... Oh, man. It's hard to pin it down because... One of the things you talked about it earlier about going to Acme Oyster House is trying the gumbo every place and putting it up against everybody else just because that, you know, that's what everybody's serving. Acme, you know, for a place that's popular, that's kind of touristy, it actually did have really good food.
Like, I love those char-broiled oysters.
You know, that was
char-broiled.
That was a smart place. Felix's was great, but... Yeah.
I went to Felix's as well.
Oh, and this and
another place with the char broiled oysters.
Yeah, and then that was pretty good. We tried alligator there. That was really good. That was excellent. The one thing that I regret that I didn't get a chance to do. We were at the St. Lawrence on Decatur. That's where we were watching. That's where we were before. I was basically there the whole time. But that they had a turducken. What was it? Turducken burger.
Yes, that sounds well. Wow. Sounds terrific, doesn't it?
That we couldn't. Yeah, we didn't get a chance to eat.
Even the airport food was good. I had an airport. I got a giant piece of chicken with red beans and rice before we flew out yesterday, and even that was heavenly. Airport food is never good, and it was dynamite.
I had a shrimp po' boy from room service.
Yes,
and it was the best one I had all week.
Ah, such good food. I am going to go with because it was the most memorable order of the week. When I was at that restaurant before that I mentioned with Handsome Hank was milk chocolate mousse. And it was really good. But I liked how Handsome says it. Say it, Handsome.
I also ordered it as well. Milk chocolate mousse.
That's not how you said it. Milk chocolate mousse. I'll have the milk chocolate mousse. I loved it. I had him say it for the next 20 minutes. He was not allowed to say anything else.
Dave, All this talk of food has got me hungry. And I think partly I expanded my stomach during Super Bowl week. Do you have anything we could eat here?
Oh, I understand that Thai Thai, we received a package from across the Atlantic Ocean. Is that right? Oh, Rank's got it right there. What
got
gives
it right
you?
Here. Yes, Mr. Stephen Bledsoe.
Oh, Drew's brother, right? Drew's British.
Maybe, maybe not. Or maybe Eric Bledsoe, the point guard.
Well, we spell things differently in the UK. So.
All right, yeah, there you go.
The T is a D normally.
The T is a D, yes. He works for Riley's Toffee Rolls. And they are currently in 140 shops in the UK.
I'm listening.
Coming here to Troy, Michigan soon. This is going to be the first time the American audience will be turned on to these. And he sent us a batch. And not only did he send us a batch of these Riley's Toffee Rolls, they were actually created while listening to DDFP number 122.
What?
Whoa.
That's amazing.
He works in the kitchen and he puts these together. So... These are from episode 122.
It feels good to make a difference in the world, and I feel like we've made it a better place, and I haven't even tasted it yet. While we're talking about fans, it was great people coming up to us. Great fella, member of the Czech Republic and the Rank Amateurs approached. Dave Chambers, New Orleans native, came up to us and brought gifts for, as a matter of fact, is such an avid listener. Brought gifts out, not just for me.
Oh, this is fantastic,
but
by the way.
Also he brought gifts for Baby Oprah and Jean-Claude Van Damischek. He even brought gifts for my children, which was just insane and nice of him. And he gets my award for best listener to the podcast. Greatly appreciated. Came out to watch us do the NFL.com live show from Media Row last week. So he gets my vote. There, Hanzus, how many people recognized you?
We're still banking at zero, but listen, just a matter of time.
I'm eating the toffee right now.
This is really fabulous. That is, I mean,
I have now left Studio 66 and I am on my way to cloud nine. Oh, wait. I'm not done yet. Hold on. Everybody wait.
Okay.
Wow. This is more delicious than the time that I got back into the game and got the latest Dieter Brock drop.
Dieter Brock drop.
That's right. I'm allowing it. I'm gonna self-police and allow that one.
I'm letting you get back. I haven't made one in the last four or five.
Wow, that
hoping
is
you get back.
So,
and
that is delicious.
That is. It tastes like bourbon almost. Huh?
For the British who are not well known for good food, they stepped up there.
Ridiculous.
That's terrible.
Oh, that's absolutely ridiculous.
After that treacle pie calamity back in December.
Wait a second. You're talking about a prize-winning treacle tart.
By the way, why would you attack poor Handsome Hank? He made that with his own mitts.
That's how you became known as Empty Hansus.
Yeah, oh. I probably should not call back.
We had
that
a
dark
pie
day.
Competition here on the DDFP, and Hansus showed up with a fork and not a pie.
That's right. My style.
So terrible.
Shame on you. That's
next year.
That's
I promise
bad.
You, we do the same thing this year. I will
get
make
your
amends
wife. You
in
will order your
way.
Wife to make right. to make a pie for you.
I don't care much. I honestly, people keep wanting. I've a lot of people have not one on one. I don't mean on Twitter or anything, but it just seems like it's something that people want to kibitz about when they see you. Oh, you were at the Super Bowl. What was it like when the lights went out? I gotta say, I don't know. I don't have any feeling about it. I don't have any. I certainly don't have any conspiracy theories about it.
No.
Kadri Ishmael, our pal. Matt Money Smith on his radio show Petros and Money had Kadri Ishmael on, who does the color for the Baltimore Ravens and of course won the Super Bowl with the Ravens 11 years ago. And Kadri was on there and said that the NFL did it. It was a conspiracy to turn the lights off to help kill the momentum of the Ravens and bring the Niners back into the game. Money stopped down and said, "You're being facetious, right? You can't actually think that." And he repeated it and said, "Let me say it again." I even tweeted at Kadri Ishmael and I said, "Kadri Ishmael is a kook, a conspiracy theory." And Kadri emailed me or tweeted back and had some other ones about UFOs and aliens. So at least he has a sense of humor. But that aside, that conspiracy theory aside, the whole momentum thing, whatever. Like I say, I've already just said 20 minutes ago, I feel like it was clear that the Niners were on their way. They were gonna make a run by hook or by crook. I don't think it has anything to do with this, this ethereal notion of momentum anyway. But my takeaway was, I don't know, it just was kind of it was weird. It was the Super Bowl and the lights went out, but I don't know. I don't think it was anything really all that. But I didn't think it affected the game. Rank, how say you?
Even Tim Brown thinks that's a little too much.
Yeah, it goes too far.
That's your way off base. It did kind of kill the whole mood, though. Like, sitting in the stands, because, like, where I was sitting was the corner of the end zone, and we pretty much had to stand the whole game. The fans were into it. It was great. I mean, they just came back.
But they quieted down once it got to 28-20.
I'm
being sarcastic. That's when the game got good. I imagine they stayed enthused.
Well, it was primarily Ravens fans. It was all it seemed like we were in a Ravens section.
Two-thirds, by the way, speaking of that, two-thirds Ravens fans,
Ravens
would you say?
Home game, yeah.
Maybe
absolutely.
Even three-quarters?
Maybe more.
But that when that happened, it was just such a bummer. In a half hour,
it was weird. I just didn't feel like it influenced what happened afterwards. Hansus, how say you?
Well, I think the Niners were going to make a comeback. You know, the kickoff return to start the third quarter, which happened while I was in the restroom, which is disgraceful. But, you know, that kind of pushed it back.
Thank you for sharing that tidbit.
Yeah. But I thought it was going to happen. It just happened to sync up that way. But, you know, Ishmael, that's insane. I mean, we as a league employee, obviously I'm not going to go along with him. But even if I wasn't, you can't say that. It's bizarre.
Wait a second. You went in the restroom and did your business in the sink? Is that what I'm... Maybe I misunderstood what you were saying. Handsome, your reflections on that weirdness.
I mean, I agree with you guys. I don't think it made any difference, really, in terms of the game. For me, though, it contributed, and I'm someone who gets caught up in the moment a lot, but you were sitting near me during the game, or standing near me, and I said repeatedly, best Super Bowl ever.
Well, all right,
that... And, And I know that that's not – when I say best, I mean most memorable. And what I mean by that is in the 60 minutes of playing time, there were more moments, like exciting, thrilling moments than most Super Bowls I can remember. Wow. A lot of them have those signature moments, the, you know, the helmet catch, the great Santonio Holmes catch. You know, they've all got that. But in terms of just packed, you know, if it was a movie, there was action the whole way through rather than a great closing scene.
Well, I did want to get to that, so let's talk about that right now. What were you going to say there, Rank?
Except for that 30 minutes when nobody did anything.
But well, that was exciting. There was a bit of a buzz around that, you know, like this. Well, this has never happened before.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll tell you right now, this will be the first Super Bowl and the last Super Bowl ever that will have brothers coaching and a 30-minute blackout in the middle. I'm willing to guarantee that.
And I'd also say this will be hopefully the first and last Super Bowl where at some point I feel like I'm in grave danger. So
you actually felt that?
I did, yeah.
Easily panicked.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, has nothing to do with the blackout. That has to do with what happened in the restroom.
Yeah, right. There were some, I will not name them, but there were a couple NFL employees that actually left the building in the editorial department out of fear.
You're
which
kidding
is
me. I'd like them to be
cowardice.
Called out by name. I'd like
Please,
for them to be.
Did you think the Shield was going to come out and like take out. Start taking people out, or the Undertaker was going to return.
I didn't know.
Bane!
I stayed around, though. I said, all right, if this is how it's going to go down, I guess it's at least memorable. Some guys hightailed it out of the building.
That's
why
terrific.
You stuck so close to me.
Name
you
names.
I knew I wanted to get, you know, behind the broad-shouldered Englishman.
I want names.
I can't give them
name
out.
Names.
All right, so they must be direct superiors, and we'll let around the league fans, Flames, do the math on who those
I will
people
start,
might be.
I will start recklessly speculating. Was one of them Greg Aiello?
You really want to get me fired, don't you?
No. So you're saying that's who it was?
No, it was. I don't know if he was one of them, but that is not the ones I had in mind.
It would have been funny if it was Joe Flacco. Colin Kaepernick. All right. What about what Handsome says there? So you stand by that. You say best and what that means to you. You know, same thing as an MVP decision is best, is however you want to talk about that. Best Super Bowl ever. I was trying to do the math on that. We talked about it, you know, whatever it was, 3 weeks or so ago. I do think it definitely joins the top five games. It's got to be in the conversation. Super Bowl 13, Steelers and Cowboys, 35-31. Is in that mix. That's what the great Gil Brandt, the Cowboys architect, says. The one people forget, Patriots and Panthers was really good. Mm-hmm. The one that's overrated is Rams Titans was a great couple minutes, but the game was a snooze for the most part. Steve McNair's comeback at the end was what made that one so great. Steelers and Cardinals was good, but that was really more about, you talk about moments, that was more about James Harrison's play at the end of the first half than the last 5 minutes of that game, the back and forth of Kurt Warner and Larry Fitzgerald scoring the touchdown, then Roethlisberger driving him down the field for the win. But that game in total wasn't probably as compelling as the second half of of this one was. 47, I'm going to put it, I don't know, I'm going to put it top five at worst.
Well, I wouldn't.
Oh, one more. Broncos Packers. That was another game that somehow you people don't. When people start talking about that, that was a fascinating game too. That was chock full. I remember Brett Favre throws it to Antonio Freeman, or maybe it was Robert Brooks, right at the start of the game. He thought, oh, they're going to house this team. They're going to destroy this Broncos team. But the Broncos hung around. That's when Terrell Davis gets the headache, all that stuff, and they end up winning it. Brett Favre. Throws incomplete on fourth down. That's also one of the – I'd say that's top five. I think I just gave you about five games. Hansus.
Well, where do you put the two Giants-Patriots games?
In terms of America's satisfaction with the result, at the very top. I think everybody loved, ironically, seeing the red, white, and blue Patriots lose. I guess I would say last year's was better than the first one.
Well, the first one was so historic, though. I mean, there was something important
about that.
That's
true. Yeah, talk about a moment. Rank, how say you?
Yeah, I would put I don't agree with you on the Cardinals Steelers one. That was the most exciting game.
It was. I agree that stretches of it were exciting. There was not
outside of the exciting parts. It wasn't very good. I mean, you could say that about it. If you take away all the exciting parts of Sunday's game, it wasn't very good. Of course, I mean
touché.
Obviously I'm going to say it's a top five. But the Cardinals Steelers one was really good. The Super Bowl 36, the Patriots' first Super Bowl win over the St. Louis Football Club. At the time when we were all rooting for the Patriots, It was a different world. You know, it was coming off 9/11.
11 years later. Yeah. How much the world has changed.
Yeah. And you put in with the halftime show with U2 doing the halftime show and everything. And that great, just the St. Louis tying the game with 2 minutes left and John Madden being like, well, they should just play for overtime. And the Patriots just went out and did it. And
can you believe we still haven't had an overtime game?
Unbelievable.
Isn't that crazy? 47 through, and we still haven't had an overtime game.
I thought this was the year.
Hanzus, to go back real quick to the decisive last couple minutes there, pass interference, defensive holding, whatever, do you like the no call there?
No call. You know, such a big moment, unless it's truly blatant, which I didn't think it was. You got to hold on to
the flag. Here's the thing I think. A few thoughts on that. One, I feel like it is pass interference. I mean, it's holding, however you want to call it, whether it's PI or holding. It is a foul, and the flag should have dropped there. When did the NFL turn into the NHL where, like, oh, no, you gotta bury the whistle because it's at a critical time of the game? I don't think that's the standard that you apply there. It's a penalty if it's a penalty, period. But I think what happened there was Michael Crabtree is the guy who blew it there. Because why he stops there? I don't understand what he was. What maybe I think he wasn't even on the same page as Kaepernick, is my guess there. Because he does not move like his physical movements do not move like somebody who thinks the ball is going where Kaepernick throws it. He stops before he gets to the goal line, and then tries to break through, and then he's held there, and now all his momentum has been killed. But he still gets close enough to the ball where you kind of think like, oh, that was an uncatchable pass. And so I think that's what happens. I think the referee looks at it and thinks that's an uncatchable ball. That's why I'm not going to call it. But if he doesn't break his stride to begin with and then gets held on that, then I think the referee is compelled to throw the flag there. But I'm conflicted if he should have dropped it there, because like I say, I think ultimately if you're watching that in real time, up close, and you're feeling the momentum, the physical momentum of the receiver, you see that he is not going full force as he gets to the DB. So I think you let that one go because it looks like an uncatchable ball, I feel like, in real time.
It wasn't – I think Kaepernick audibled into the fade route, and they were playing press coverage for the cornerbacks and then sending the house.
Yeah.
So just the play itself, it was going to be very difficult to be able to pull off what they were going for. You know, Harbaugh said today, you know, he wished he had a chance to make a different play call, but I think his exact quote was the woulda, shoulda, coulda, could have remains undefeated or something like that.
Ultimately, isn't it funny that the fact that they didn't get the third down playoff is maybe what kills them, because if they run it on third down, maybe they score a touchdown there. Let's say they get 2 yards and it's fourth and goal from the 2.5 there. I think then they do run it no matter what. That timeout, or at the very least, they would have that extra timeout to burn, and then they would use it and really, oh, it looks like the Ravens are bringing the house here, timeout, and they would design something different there. All right, I want to talk about Hall of Fame real quick, because those are the things came out. And aside from, I don't quibble too much, I'm glad Chris Carter finally gets in. I think he is one of the top 20 receivers of the Super Bowl era, so I don't know by what standard he hasn't already been in the Hall of Fame. But applying that same standard, and I wrote a little piece about it that Handsome Hank, I hope, will be good enough to share with you, the general public, on the website at some point soon. Why? Where is that already, Handsome? You can't talk about you can't show my words to people?
No, I absolutely can. I will.
So,
when I make a commitment to you, Dave, I mean it. And you can always, you know, look me in the eyes when I'm speaking
right.
to you. I make a commitment.
That I need to be spoken to in that fashion here in Studio 66.
I'm not going to apologize.
Taste the blaster! Now.
I'm not going to
apologize.
You
want to have a polite discourse, we can.
I'm not going to apologize for making a commitment and following through on it.
All right. So, I say Chris Carter belongs in the Hall of Fame, but so too do Charles Haley and Jerome Bettis, who also rank in the top 20 of their respective positions. Charles Haley should be in the Hall, but I wrote about Jerome Bettis. How are these guys not in the Hall of Fame, and especially Jerome Bettis? I said on Twitter that Bettis, to me, is one of the top 20 running backs of the Super Bowl era. And people scoffed at that. Everybody agrees with Charles Haley. Yes, of course, he's one of the great pass rushers of all time. And it's an injustice that he's not in the Hall of Fame. He's maybe because he was a surly guy. The media doesn't love him. But how do you figure Bettis, Hanzus, weigh in? Is he not one of the top 20 running backs?
I think Bettis was a great player in his time, but do I look at him as one of the best running backs I've ever seen? No, I don't. So that's my answer. And that's the same reason I don't think Tim Brown's a Hall of Famer.
Curtis Martin was better than Jerome Bettis?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Martin was a great player. And I'm not saying that because the Jets
Tomlinson was better?
Yes.
Yes. More versatile.
You ranked LaDainian Tomlinson ahead of Bettis.
John Riggins?
Similar.
John Riggins is better. I mean, that's a legitimate question. Handsome. John Riggins is better than Jerome Bettis?
I wouldn't agree with that.
Neither would I.
He's kind of an iconic type player, too, which I'm sure helps him.
Fine. Why is Jerome Bettis not? And listen, I will happily concede when I don't think, just because I root for the Steelers, I don't think every one of the Steelers belongs in the Hall of Fame. Although, when his candidacy comes up, Hines Ward absolutely does belong in the Hall of Fame, and we can talk about that all you want. No. Edge James. Is Edge James ranked better than Jerome Bettis? Not better. Is he more worthy of the Hall of Fame?
I wouldn't put either one of them in.
Ah, that's an interesting take. Hanzus.
I think he falls under the same thing with Don Mattingly in baseball. Not enough years.
I don't care about numbers so much. I care more about what my, you know, because numbers aren't liars. But you know what? My eyeballs and my gut aren't liars either. And that's the test, is the standard. And there are certain guys we talk about all the time, Bo Jackson and Billy Sims and Terrell Davis, those guys, who would have been in the Hall of Fame if it weren't for injury. But Jerome Bettis, so the eyeball test, to me, what am I missing? Jerome Bettis was an iconic-looking rusher to me. He was he had a distinctive style. He was a battering ram who also had that nimble-footed dance in traffic kind of move going. He wasn't just a big fat guy. He wasn't Pete Johnson of the Cincinnati Bengals. He had legitimate escapability. He was a halfback, but he was a big fat guy too. He had iconic runs. He had big he came up big in at least some situations over the course of his career. And to go against myself and say the numbers don't matter that much, the durability, 13 years in the league, he retires as the sixth leading rusher of all time. He's the most durable big back ever. That has to count for something. We've watched Earl Campbell fizzle out
aren't you
early
too
in
close
his career.
That's what you're basing this on. He played longer than some of these guys.
He finished the sixth leading rusher. He didn't just play. Among the all-time greats.
But if you want to recognize him for his ability to hang around the NFL for a long time, then congratulations.
But he didn't merely hang around. He performed well.
He didn't. How many times did he lead the league in rushing?
I don't know.
None. How many times did he have double-digit numbers in rushing touchdowns? Twice. Over his career. For a guy who's considered a battering ram at the end zone, twice he had double-digit totals and touchdowns. That he was even a – I'm using the numbers. He never led the league in rushing.
Become the standard that he has to lead the league in rushing? Why does he have to lead the league in rushing to be a Hall of Famer? But here's the other side of it is, I'm looking at the numbers with you right now. He goes a 1,400-yard season, then 1,665, which ranks, I'm sure, in the top, 12 individual seasons all time, I would bet. No?
Probably
top 20.
Top 50. 11.
Almost 1,200, almost 1,100, 1,340, over a grand. I mean, listen, those numbers stack up. The numbers are there. I don't get it.
I think as well, he didn't lead the league in rushing, but you look at the players who were in the league at the same time as him. We had Emmitt Smith, who year after year led the league in rushing. LaDainian Tomlinson kind of followed that and did that same thing. I don't think that him not leading the league in rushing in any single season is the be-all and end-all, but it helps. It helps. I agree.
Kevin Green is the number 3 sack guy of all time. He's not a Hall of Famer. I just think sometimes cumulative numbers should really.
I'm inclined to agree with that assessment, but I don't. But we're not. I'm not making a case that Jerome Bettis is one of the 5 best running backs of all time. I'm saying he's a Hall of Famer, and I don't know. I sat down and made. I cobbled my list together.
Did you think he was the best? Like when you, Handsome Hank, just mentioned like guys who are better than him who should be in the Hall of Fame. LaDainian Tomlinson should be in the Hall of Fame. Curtis Martin should be in the Hall of Fame. Emmitt Smith, Barry Sanders. He wasn't on those guys' level.
But he will – look, yes. He's not a first ballot Hall of Famer. He will be in the Hall of Fame
eventually. He hasn't been a second or a third ballot Hall of Famer.
But he will be in
either.
The Hall of Fame eventually.
Well, first of all, I find that hokey, that if you're not a Hall of Famer, you're not a first ballot. This this precious little nuance that these voters have. That,
well, he's not a first ballot guy, but I'm going to put him in. I just have to make him sweat a little bit first. What? What is that?
No, because their play is more worthy.
Then on the other hand, you have this veterans committee that does put in Dave Robinson. If he was so good, why didn't he go in four decades ago?
Well, I agree with that. I agree with that.
But Jerome Bettis and Charles Haley don't get in when anybody who – well, I guess you guys don't agree with me. So I'm 0-3 with my opinion versus you guys. None of you guys see Jerome Bettis as a Hall of Famer.
I do see him as a Hall of – I see him exactly as what you're talking about. He will be a Hall of Famer eventually, but I don't think he should be. He's exactly the kind of guy who'll get in on a veterans committee because
the fish will have
The fish will have got even bigger by the time, you know, by the time it gets around 20 years from now. He'll have done all kinds of things.
Do you think he was a better running back than Terrell Davis?
No, but I did give that caveat. I think there are two groups that you have to identify, but that aren't going to be in the Hall of Fame, but they are. The guys that got hurt and had their careers ended too early. William Andrews of the Falcons was a dynamite. Look up his numbers and see how they stack up among his peers. And until he got hurt and ruined his knee in the 80s, he was on his way to a dynamite career. Billy Sims, to me, as I always say, my favorite single rusher to ever look at for those 4 years. And if he had been born a generation later, probably plays another 8 years and maybe finishes among the all-time leading rushers. And so on. So there's that group. But then there's the USFL guys, the guys who signed away to get the money. Joe Cribbs, Herschel Walker would have, you know, he, 18-game season, you know, he played in, what was it, two seasons or three in the USFL? I'm not sure. But 18-game seasons, he goes over 2,000 yards. He took a beating playing these meaningless games. By the time he gets to the NFL, he's already past his best years and still has a nice career. But anyway, him. Calvin Bryant, who people may remember from UNC and then went on and still had some decent years in the NFL. Mike Rozier, those guys, but they're not in the Hall of Fame. They did go to the USFL. If we remove those guys from the conversation because they are moot because of injury or decisions they made, if we're talking about the guys who had 9 to 12 years in the NFL, yes. Jerome Bettis is one of the top 20 to me that my eyeballs have seen. I can't speak about guys who played in 1953. I didn't see them play, but the guys I've seen, yeah, he's in the top 20 to me.
I can't believe we spent 15 minutes talking about this and not about the fact that Charles Haley didn't get in the Hall of Fame.
All right,
I mean,
that to me is far
more extraordinary than
all right, conversation for another time. But I agree. Who's better, Charles Haley or Warren Sapp? Rank, how say you?
Who's better?
Who deserves to be in the Hall of Fame?
I think they both are Hall of Famers. I think they both deserve to be in. I'm not one of these guys who's like, he's a first ballot, I'll put him in eventually. You're either in or you're out. Charles Haley in, Warren Sapp in, Strahan in. These guys, Tim Brown out,
yeah,
Jerome
Strahan
Bettis out.
It's cuckoo.
It's just ridiculous.
Handsome Hank, Sapp or Haley?
Haley.
I have the same thinking as Rank.
Both are Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Well, I guess.
You asked who was a better player.
Yeah, that Haley. Is what I asked.
Haley.
Haley made the difference in more games than Sapp did.
He was the key to that Cowboys run in 92.
Who will be better in 2013, the Baltimore Ravens or the San Francisco 49ers? Handsome Hank, I start with you.
I think it depends what you mean by better. If you're talking about records, something I can measure, then I think the Ravens will have a better record.
Well, what other standard would I apply?
Well, you just did apply a different standard for Jerome Bettis.
No,
I didn't. You said you weren't going to go on the numbers.
I said my primary resource
like
are my
like
eye. My eyeballs also read the numbers.
So eyeballs, I'd say the 49ers will be a better team, but they're in a very difficult division. I think the Rams are going to be a lot
better
next year than they were this time around. Who knows about the Cardinals? I'll reserve judgment on that. I think the Ravens will have an easier run in their division, and therefore they'll have a better record. Thank you.
Zeus, I'll say you.
I think the Niners, especially if Kaepernick continues to progress, will be the best team in the league next year, and I could see them back in the big game at the end of the season.
And will Kaepernick continue to progress?
I believe so. I think he's a stud. And I think the Ravens are a classic team that I could see dropping down to 9-7.
Do you think the Niners win the NFC West next year or the Seahawks or the Rams, who I agree are going to be a very good team next year?
I think the Niners are a 12 or 13 win team next year. So
who,
I think
who's
going to
win that division?
That will win the division.
Rank, how say you?
49ers will be better. The Ravens... You know, every year John Harbaugh's been the coach. They've reached the playoffs. They feel he'll have the team going. better off, you know, with Joe Flacco now assuming control of this team. New offensive system with Jim Caldwell. They're going to be back.
Is Jim Harbaugh or John Harbaugh, is either of them the best coach in the NFL?
Hard to argue against John Harbaugh right now.
I was all set to anoint Jim Harbaugh the best coach in the NFL. I mean, he should have been in the Super Bowl in his first year, gets to the Super Bowl. I mean, still maybe make that case. I mean, look what he's done. Look at the you talk about guts and, you know, the Alex Smith decision, but really, that's a remarkable choice. And John Harbaugh, also tip your hat to him, too. I mean, that's a Cam Cameron. Everybody could see that before the season and even last season. Cam Cameron should have probably been fired. But John Harbaugh pulls the trigger on that late in the season, and it makes all the difference. If he doesn't do that, obviously the Ravens don't probably do that. I don't even know that they necessarily make the playoffs. Hanzus, how say you? Best coach in the NFL right now.
You know, John Harbaugh does deserve more respect because I feel like he's been in Jim's shadow, and, you know, even the last 2 weeks he was. But I have to say, if I were starting a team from scratch and, you know, Belichick is older, obviously, and hasn't won in several years now. I would probably go with Jim. I just think he's a winner.
You'd go with Jim over Belichick. I agree with that.
Yeah, I think he's a winner. I think he has impeccable taste and abilities to develop quarterbacks, which is the most important position. He would be my guy.
You know who's not the best coach in the NFL? Well, he's not a coach right now. Is Dave Wannstedt. Back in 2005 when he was the Pitt head coach, he decided to start Tyler Palko over Joe Flacco. He also, in a decade before, decided to let Jim Harbaugh walk out the door as the Bears' starting quarterback so he could start Eric Kramer. So his track record of grooming QBs, not as good.
And that's why he's gone from head coach to a special teams coordinator over two or three years.
Wow. Handsome Hank showing me breaking news. The Jags have a new logo. Does this mean that they're going to have new get-ups altogether?
They're getting new get-ups as well.
And the Dolphins might. Wow. Well, we know the Dolphins are getting new. The Browns might. That would be the most despicable if the Browns change their uniform vastly. I'm going to be very upset about that. All right. Should we save Super Bowl 20? Should we save Super Bowl 48? Picks for the next podcast, or should we do them right now? Real quick, rank Super Bowl 48 who will be participating. And let's remember that Rank's pick for Super Bowl 47 included the Chiefs. So take it all with a grain of salt. Andy doesn't think Jerome Bettis belongs in the Hall of Fame. Andy thinks that Vegas is better than New Orleans. All those caveats aside, speak.
Are we still?
I don't know how you could say Vegas with a straight face is better than New Orleans.
I'm more of a desert person.
One is real. One's the genuine article. One is a treasure that we all should embrace as something that distinguishes us, not just but from the rest of the globe. A place it is! It's out in the swamp. The people are wonderful. They're southern and charming, but also it's voodoo and spooky, and it gets foggy all the time. And it's when the food can't be beat. And all of it. Vegas is just a bunch of weird cartoon buildings.
They have aliens, so we got that going for us. Mm-hmm. The golf is way better, I would say.
All right. Well, I guess if you're a golfer, all right. Fair point, but that's narrow group.
One of the worst casinos in all of Vegas is Harrah's. Like, that is the one place. Nobody's ever been like, hey, meet me at the Harrah's, except in New Orleans, that's your only casino.
But isn't that the argument? Isn't that the very argument that you're like, yeah, that's so, yeah, that's there. That's like number eight on my list of things to do because I got so many good things. The music, the people can't be beat. Vegas is a magnet for all the worst elements of every region of this country. All the negative stereotypes from the Deep South to the Northeast to the frat dudes, they all swarm to that Vegas. New Orleans, these people, they're just delightful. They're charming and they're polite and they embrace you and they have a joie de vivre that I covet and I would do anything to have, and instead I'm a miserable person and Hanzus, how say you?
No, I would just rank likes to be based or appeals to cities that don't have an NFL franchise so he can support as many teams as possible.
That helps.
Yeah.
Handsome Hank, how say you on this?
I'm fortunate in a way because I can come to you from a very, very open mind. A lot of you guys, obviously, you're stuck with, I was born here, I'm from there. Hmm. I'm not from here, so I can go out on a limb. Well, not on a limb at all. I can tell you right now, America, I've traveled you coast to coast. I've spent a lot of time investigating your cities. New Orleans, number one. Hands down.
I got to put my proper list together, but destination cities, I think I would go I've never been to Austin, so that's a bad omission to
that's,
not have.
Yeah,
because people love it there.
That's going to hurt you.
People love it, but of the places I've been, it goes San Francisco, Chicago, especially in summertime, is great. The best summer city, I would say, is Chicago. New Orleans, obviously, I've spoken about. And number one is Pittsburgh. But, I mean, it's right.
There it goes.
Yep.
Pittsburgh.
Well, see, I can give a little bit more of an open-minded.
It's terrific, though. That place is also terrific, and they've got a long, long offseason ahead as that team implodes. But we're not or loses all these guys. We're not talking about that. The Super Bowl we didn't get your 48 pick yet, right? Go ahead.
It's going to be the Packers.
Okay.
What's the chalk? Ravens, Packers. I'm going to be like you guys now. I'm just going to go chalk so I can be like, hey, listen, I had showing.
Who?
Patriots. Patriots.
You're accusing me of that?
Who was your pick?
I never do that.
You picked the Patriots and the Packers. There it is. There's my pick. Patriots, Packers.
Wow, that wasn't such
Let's be uninspired.
Dave, handsome. You remember Super Bowl 19, 49ers, Dolphins?
I do.
Same game, different result.
Hanzeus, how say you? Don't say the Jets. You'll look even sillier than Handsome Hank just looked.
All right. Niners. And the Patriots. One last run.
We've turned the page as a society from the Patriots already. Enough of that. That's old news. The correct answer is the Seattle Seahawks going up against the Cincinnati Bengals. I know I made a few bad picks along the way this year, but that's now in the rearview mirror. I absolutely, positively guarantee you, no matter what happens in free agency, the draft, injuries in preseason and otherwise, Bengals Seahawks, New Jersey, in 2-degree temperature. It's going to be a lot of fun. All right, so we'll do another podcast later in the week. Also, we have to get to Handsome Hank a game worn sweatshirt from Handsome Hank. That because it was chilly for the poor Englishman up in the Superdome.
Not just
so
for the poor Englishman.
Hold he had to second. Buy a Super Bowl 47 sweatshirt. We are going to be giving it away to one lucky listener.
Signed.
Does it have?
Is it you're going to sign
I will
it?
Sign it.
Game worn.
Game worn Super
Terrific.
Bowl 47 hoodie.
Does
signed.
It have Handsome Hank's musk on it?
It will have have a little bit of my musk on it.
The ladies are going to really be bidding for
this.
We
have to do that. I have a couple of complaints I still have to share from New Orleans. We'll get to those. And
we still didn't. We need
Rank
to rank
and I
the
probably,
bars.
Oh yeah, we
did a bar list. Well, let's do a proper one. Like,
we have
later
more time
week.
For that at another time. But right now we are rolling on out of the studio, out of Studio 66. Here comes Rich Eisen and company. Here, everybody. All right, so we will be back with episode number 130. We're going to talk to Ravens linebacker.
Rich just made a pretty bold proclamation, too, about Big Earn being the funniest movie character of all time.
Big Earn?
From Kingpin.
Oh, that is
that's Murray. Hard to beat.
That is very tough to beat. That's certainly Bill Murray's greatest role.
So.
Bill Murray's greatest role. I agree with that. All right, so listen, we'll get into all that jazz, and I think we are going to be talking to the Ravens linebacker and good guy Brendan Ayan Bendejo on the next episode. Until then, though, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.